Hello, race fans. Welcome to another edition of the Weekly Overtake Podcast. This week, we'll be talking about the Canada Grand Prix. First off, I want to talk about the track a little bit. It is a interesting track in that there's three DRS zones. It's a dedicated racetrack, but it kind of feels like more of a hybrid style circuit. Very skinny width on the track itself, and then you have really close walls, you know, all the chicanes and corners. So the barriers kind of shrink it down. It feels a lot more like a street circuit, and that's some implications for a penalty that we'll discuss later on today. But throughout free practice, FP2, we had accidents for Lewis Hamilton. He hit the wall of champions coming out of the end, and then Max Verstappen as well. FP2, the medium tire looked really weak during free practice too. And for me, FP2 is important because it mimics the time of day and conditions generally that are most like qualifying. So when I'm watching free practice, 1 and 3 are great, but FP2 is usually where I have my eye to try and get an idea of what we're going to see come qualifying and then the race. So some talks about rules during free practice. Christian Horner was interviewed, and he's vocal as always. Always loves to talk with, you know, the commentators and talk about some rule changes, which we're not going to get into on this episode. We're going to save that for the future, really once we have more information, because right now, we know the general topics about costs and revenues and performance changes to the vehicles, but it's really super vague. And after the meetings that was conducted this past weekend with Liberty Media and the teams, they decided to postpone the actual specifics until this October. So in the coming months, hopefully we get a lot more information to see what's going to happen in 2021. But for now, we'll have to just set that aside. Lance Stroll and Racing Point. So home race for them, Sergio Perez and Lance Stroll. He had a hydro issue during free practice 3, and he was out in qualifying 1. He was not able to qualify. So unfortunate for him in his home race, but they had a pretty good result. We'll talk about that. Yeah, if you want to just go into the race or qualifying, we'll talk qualifying for a little bit, Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, so qualifying was actually pretty interesting. Finally saw Ferrari getting back to where they were supposed to be kind of after the shit show that was Monaco. So it was good to see Leclerc on the podium or up there in qualifying. So yeah.
Ferrari just seemed like they shook all the cobwebs off, at least from Monaco. It was a massive mistake they made last time around. I don't think we expected them to make it again, but they were definitely sure that they were not going to make it again. They were doing double stints in every session just to make sure that they covered them off, and they actually led Q1. Ferrari's topped it, and Q2 Mercedes topped it, but right back there in Q3, a blazing lap from Vettel. He was 2/10 up on Hamilton. So
yeah, so we also saw Ricardo on 4th in qualifying. So I don't know, what do you think about that? How did you think he got there? You know, because it's not typically that's his best qualifying to date, or you know, this year. So
yeah, and Renault's best qualifying since 2010, which is a pretty crazy stat. But the evolution got really hot there for a little bit during Q2 and early parts of Q3, but then it really fell off towards the end. I think Ricardo really had no business being up and fourth, although props to him for taking advantage and pushing. And, you know, when you can capitalize on other teams' mistakes, then you better be in the right position to do so. So props to him, props to Renault for being in the right place at the right time. But Max Verstappen was really unlucky, I think, in Q2. He had a lot of traffic on his first run, so he couldn't get out there and set the best lap. He was stuck in P11. He had to come back in, get another set of tires, and go back out. And just as he was in Sector 3 of his flying lap, Kevin Magnussen went into the wall of champions, bounced off of that one across the circuit into another wall, and red flagged the session and basically ruined it for his teammate Grosjean and Max Verstappen, who had to start in 11th place for the race. Fortunately, he moved up a couple grid places because Magnussen was ahead of him in 10th at the time when he crashed. So he didn't set a time in Q3, and he basically had to replace, you know, his whole car was basically brand new, the chassis, the gearbox, MGUK. So yeah, he faced penalties for that. And then Carlos Sainz as well faced penalties for a 3-place grid penalty for impeding someone during qualifying. So Max didn't have to start 11th, he started 9th. But, I mean, still very unfortunate because he should have been fighting for top 3, probably.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I think, I don't know, it seemed like his strategy was he was going to go for one last sort of lap. I don't know. What do you remember what the time was when it got red flagged? I think he had only a couple, really only a couple minutes left anyways.
Yeah, that was the last opportunity they had. The lap he was on was going to be the last one. That's right. It. Like, even if the crash didn't happen, I mean, he would have crossed the line. I think we're at 0 seconds, honestly. I'm trying to think back right now, jog my memory, but yeah, that was it for everybody. All the checkered flags were hitting next to the names during that incident. So
right. Well, and you know, it didn't seem to hurt him too much, I guess, in the sense that he, you know, at one point led the race, and obviously just on the strategy, it wasn't going to work out for him, but you know, he was up there. Yeah. So let's go ahead and get into the race. And it was quite a controversial one, to say the least.
Yeah. In the end, it definitely ended up that way. And we saw, yeah, some crazy behavior, I would say, from one of the drivers, but awkward as always, never lets us down in that sense. Right off the start, I was excited for this race. The weekend, the qualifying, everything leading into it. You got Valtteri Bottas not doing great in qualifying either. He was starting sixth. So we're seeing a very different few front rows than we've seen, you know, so far this season. So you got Vettel and Hamilton on the front row. That's great. Two champions fighting it down in turn one. Okay, cool. That's exciting. Leclerc, young guy, Ricciardo on the second row with Gasly and Bottas behind them. So Mercedes knocked all the way down to the back of the third row and Verstappen starting in ninth. So it was a front cool mix at the front, I thought. So I thought we were going to see a lot more action, knowing that Valtteri is going to push at the beginning. Also, Max is going to push, as always, and fight his way to the front. So Max had the free option because he did not make it to Q3. So he was able to start on the hard tire. And everyone else was on the mediums up front except for Ricciardo. So Ricciardo had to start on that soft tire.
And I think that was probably the best strategy for Max starting off. I mean, he got, I want to say, between 30 and 40 laps out of those. 48 laps. And yeah, like I said, at one point was leading the race. Obviously, just there wasn't enough gap built up at the front to really affect any sort of major change. But, you know, and then I really feel like Leclerc, you know, he kind of addressed this at the end, but I kind of feel like Leclerc is getting just, he is playing second fiddle to Vettel, but his strategy just, you know, they were playing the long game. They knew that he couldn't keep up at the front to go on the medium tire like his teammate. Yeah. And I think, you know, honestly, I think we all kind of expect a little bit more exciting race. You know, it was perfect conditions. You know,
it was really hot conditions. So it's perfect. I mean, it's beautiful, but
yeah,
when it gets the temperatures are that high, we see a lot of negative effect on the cars.
That's true. You know, yeah. So. No, that's true. The heat did add a little bit for some. I mean, for others, like most, for a large majority of the race, you know, Hamilton was following Vettel within under 3 seconds, but most time within 2 seconds, which he's in that dirty, hot air, which theoretically should cause all these sort of problems, but you know, it didn't seem to hurt him that bad. But
no, we saw, well, the first car that went out with a brake issue was Lando Norris. Then initially I thought he hit the wall. Everyone thought he hit the wall, and they showed the replay, and it was just heat of some sort, maybe a suspension problem. We'll probably learn later this week once they discover what it was and the articles come out. But he was just rolling down that main straight, you know, rear right all jacked up, and the car was on fire. So that was a huge brake issue that we're assuming was a brake issue, probably a suspension issue. But almost every team had brake troubles except for the Mercedes. I think towards the end of the race, they had to back off a little bit when Hamilton was pushing to make another final charge. But I think there were other reasons that Hamilton was backing off there at the end.
You know, now I'm thinking, I wonder if Norris was caught up in that first corner incident with Albon, where his front splitter kind of got caught up with everybody and kind of exploded. We saw one of the Haas guys had a piece of carbon come into his cockpit area, and he kind of had to throw it out.
Yeah, Grosjean. Yeah.
So I wonder maybe if Norris got a piece of carbon stuck in maybe one of the cooling. I don't know. I'd have to check into that. But it something like that, where it could hit. Maybe a cooling duct could have been blocked and heated up that, you know, that right rear brake.
Yeah, if he would have picked it up the next time around, though. You know what I mean? Because Norris started eighth, so that incident was
Yeah, it would have been
closer towards the back.
It would have been cleaned up.
Yeah, I mean, unless he picked it up after or whatnot, but we'll see this week. I thought I wanted more from McLaren. I thought McLaren had, throughout all practice and even a little bit in qualifying, really good straight line speed, which on this track is massive with the two giant straights and three DRS zones. You saw all the teams are running less downforce, getting a huge advantage. So I expected a lot more out of them during this race, and unfortunately. Right. Yeah. Carlos Sainz this year has been the best of the rest drivers throughout the season thus far, period. So Renault finally where they should be, and McLaren missing out because of it.
Yeah, and he had enough speed at the beginning to pass Verstappen at the end of the braking zone. You know, and obviously Verstappen was on hard tire, and Carlos was on a medium or soft, but he had the top speed.
Soft tire. They had to use the softs, yeah.
Yeah, so he had he had speed. And
yeah, he was kind of a fly in the ointment for Verstappen there for about 8 laps before he could officially, like, get around him and get a move on, you know. Right. But off the start, too, just to mention, Sergio Perez and Lance Stroll, the Racing Point team, their home race here in Canada. It's Canadian-based team, and Lance Stroll, his home race. They each gained 3 spots right off the bat. So, mind you that the Racing Points, Perez started 15th, Lance Stroll started 17th, and when all was said and done, we're looking at Lance Stroll in 9th place and Perez in 12th. So, really not a bad weekend. Massive improvement for them, working their way up, you know, throughout the race. They had really good race pace, not so much in qualifying. I think a lot of teams, though, talk about how they need to build a better qualifying car. There's something about even just the Mercedes, even their advantage over Ferrari. They just have a better quality mode. They can turn that engine up a little bit higher and just get everything out of it. So, and it's so important. Grid placement in F1 is, as we know, it's everything. So you have to be able to qualify. I would say it's even almost more important than the race, you know, at times.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's certain tracks, your qualifying position is literally everything. And there's, you know, especially with the lack of passing that happens, you know, Monaco and here, you know, this track is not like that. I mean, there was definitely plenty of opportunity to pass. But you're right. I mean, clearly there is some sort of knowledge of how far can we push these power units or managing that aspect, you know, that the top teams have. So, but you know, that's part of that. That's part of that budget deal. I mean, you know, how much money are you guys going to invest into, you know, because it's not F1, unfortunately, is not all about the driver. The driver is, it's like, in my mind, it's like 30% of it. And then 70% is everything else, you know.
Engineers, rules, regulations.
You know, yeah. Just quality of the team. I mean, hell, even certain pit stops, I mean, can really make or break. It's like if you don't come out at the exact right spot, it can completely affect, you know, strategy. And so it's a fickle beast, and it's a fine line.
Yeah, for sure. Let's focus on the front, though. So Lewis and Vettel, Hamilton and Vettel, right off the bat, Vettel gets a clean start. Lewis right behind him. It was just rank and file for the first few corners and those first few laps. So they enabled DRS. Even still, Vettel still, his pace was really good at the start. Towards the middle of the race, even before the pit stops occurred, we saw some more action where Hamilton was closing the gap. I mean, what'd you see there between those two? Because really for the rest of the race, it was all about them trying to fight at the front and applying pressure. It really just looked like it was going to come down to the end between the two of them, and nobody else was even close.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so they're on similar strategies. Same tires, had very similar pace. So I as well was expecting it to basically just be a dogfight down to the wire. I think, you know, it was they were managing. They're obviously, Vettel was at the front. He was in clean air. But he also didn't have that top speed advantage. He never got DRS. So, you know, he wasn't setting, but he was still setting fastest laps, you know, consistently kind of throughout the race. Mm-hmm. So maybe he didn't have to deal with as much heat issues. So a little advantage there, but Hamilton obviously had to, you know, we saw actually a few lockups from Hamilton at one point.
Yeah, the hairpin was troubling for him, especially. So they both went in the mediums until lap 31, and they both came in and got hard tires. Now, Vettel came in first, and we thought that's Ferrari basically. You know, they're blinking first. They're going to try and call Mercedes in and go out there and try and set a quick lap. But they went one more time around, Mercedes did. And I think that didn't help them there. They could, any chance they would have had of doing, you know, cutting off Vettel through the pit stop, went away because Vettel came out on those hards and was setting a faster lap time than Lewis on the 31 lap old medium tires instantly. So that extra lap cost him probably half a second. And I'm surprised they didn't come in right after the lap after they did, they pitted right away. But
yeah,
they should have been following them. They should have been following them right in, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you immediately saw that gap. You know, they had a little graphic on the screen that was like, you know, chance of an overtake once Hamilton comes out. And it was just like, bam, 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 dropping.
Yeah, it went from a 50-50 shot down to like an 8% chance. So,
right.
In the course of one lap.
Yeah, so that was probably a miss. I think maybe the strategy behind that was that he could pull out. I mean, you know, that the medium still had some sort of life left in them that they could gain some little bit of advantage over a brand new, you know,
right,
cards that weren't that hot yet or something. But yeah, clearly just wasn't like that. I think just the track temperature was hot enough that didn't take that long for the tires to get into their own.
Yeah, and the same thing happened in reverse order basically for Valtteri Bottas. So after they brought in Hamilton, two laps later they brought in Valtteri, and then Charles Leclerc, his time, they were looking at Ferrari to Bottas, where he's going to come out in relation to him, and they realized that they had lost the advantage. So they basically said, all right, Charles, we're just going to leave you out there and hope for a safety car. And that only ended up lasting about seven more laps, so lap 38, when he came in and got tires and put on the hard for the rest of the race. So, I mean, he was able to stay ahead in the end, but yeah.
And then we'll get to the
elephant biggest, in the room.
The elephant in the room.
Lap 48.
Lap 48. Vettel was leading and went off, lost control, went into the grass, basically saved it, and re-entered the track right in front of Hamilton. And immediately Hamilton came over the radio and said, hey, unsafe re-entry. Like, and then, you know, Mercedes was all over that. And then within 10 minutes, we had basically heard that stewards gave Vettel a 5-second penalty to be tacked on at the end of the race for that unsafe re-entry, which was pretty surprising, because it seemed like at least from watching the announcers, everyone was pretty sure that, now it's not going to get a penalty. I mean, it's just kind of that's just racing, you know. I mean, really, the track here is so narrow. You know, like you said in the beginning, the street circuit, very narrow. It is a wonder that Vettel was able to save that anyways. So
yep.
Expecting him to, because I don't know, and I'd like to talk about this rule or in this situation, mm-hmm. You know, yes, the driver that loses control does have a responsibility to re-enter the track safely.
Right.
However, I think it was in most people's opinions that in this situation, at this particular corner, there wasn't a lot of room to re-enter as well. And if there's this expectation that Vettel was just supposed to jam on the brakes in the grass, I mean, to slow down enough to get to the left out of the racing line. I mean, it's
you're in grass, right? So he runs off, he cuts the chicane too far to the inside, and now he's in the grass. So what are you going to do with that much power and slicks on grass? Nothing. You're not going to stop. You're not going to accelerate. You turn the wheel, it's just going to turn. You're going to have loads of understeer. Nothing's going to happen. You're going to continue right onto the track. Even when he got back onto the asphalt or the hardtop, he turned his wheel left and still slid and had a snap, you know? So he had no grip in my eyes going into that corner. He made a mistake, no doubt. Like, he was getting pressured from Hamilton. This is on lap 48. So about in between their pit stop and the end of the race. So about halfway through, they're both on the same set of tires, and Hamilton just had better pace behind Vettel. Vettel was having heat issues with his brakes, was having to coast into corners, and Hamilton seemingly had no issues with his car at the time. So he was under a lot of pressure, made a mistake, but I don't know what else he could have done. Like, luckily he got grip. He could have just as easily, depending on if he had a bump in the grass or if there was something crazy, they could have sent him over the tarmac and straight into the wall, you know?
Yeah.
So, but luckily everything was smooth and clean. He got back on and got on the gas. I get it. He came into the racing line, but it's so narrow. Like, it's, I don't know.
Right.
And then to get a penalty for it.
Especially 5 seconds. I mean, obviously, I don't even know if they give something less than that as far as time penalty. 5 seconds may be their lowest. But, like, yeah. Okay, so it's unsafe reentry for who? Because what it seemed like was Vettel did it as safely as possible for himself, right? Because any like you said, cranking the wheel to the left in the grass, jamming on the brakes in the grass, would have been pretty unsafe for Vettel, you know? Now I get it. Yeah, you're right. It was his fault. I mean, he didn't make a mistake, but like I said, I immediately felt like it just goes against the spirit of racing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't know if there's this unrealistic expectation, you know, just perfection all the time. It's like, well, nobody really wants to watch that.
Right.
What my feeling is. And I think this is going to be, I think it's just another blemish on just F1 as a whole, you know, and it's not everyone's fault. I just think it's the stewards.
Yeah. Roles reversed. I think the exact same thing happens. And I think the opposite teams are mad for the same reasons. You know what I mean? If Vettel was there, we know he would have been immediately just as Lewis did. He would have been, hey, what happened? You can't do that. And then Ferrari would have raised a fit with the stewards. And I mean, assuming the same call was made in the end,
right?
Same incident, then it would be the same thing probably in reverse. I don't know if we would have saw the actions from Vettel after the race from Lewis, you know, but
we can't
assume that.
So. No. And I don't blame Mercedes for bringing it up. And I wouldn't blame Ferrari either. I mean, they're really only operating under kind of the rules that are there, and like, and the culture of the climate of that kind of the penalty culture. And so, okay. I mean, fair enough. I mean,
yeah, it's gamesmanship. Do what it takes to win. Basically.
Right.
It's not wrong.
Exactly. Which is why like, and Vettel is acknowledges that, hey, don't like, nobody really should be mad at Hamilton. Don't boo him. Really don't even boo Mercedes. I mean, we should be booing the stewards, and that's who I'm booing for sure. No doubt.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a bit of a squeeze. Hamilton had to apply the brakes and slow down to kind of let Vettel back in. But even if Vettel came back on the inside and was somehow able to get traction, they would have been a wheel to wheel, and it's a left corner. So, you know, like,
I really do think that Hamilton probably would have passed him. Like if somehow Vettel was able to get out of that racing line, he would have had to do that with less speed. And so, yeah, for sure, Hamilton would have passed him.
I think if he did, Vettel would have got it back, personally. I mean, Vettel was out front the whole time, had no DRS, and that Ferrari's monstrous with DRS and low downforce on those straights.
Yeah.
There's three sections where he could have got it. I mean, Hamilton is a pro at the front. He's used to it. He's comfortable there. He can make that car wide. But, yeah, that would have been interesting if he did get by. But, I mean, now we'll never know. We just know that Vettel officially. So, yeah, second place. For a second there at the end, we thought he was 4.6 behind initially when the time board said, and we were like, oh, no, all the way down to P3 from P1.
But
that wasn't the case. He did end in second, 3.6 seconds off after the five-second penalty. So Charles Leclerc was 4.69 seconds. So,
I mean, it was close.
0.3 seconds away from finishing in second.
Yeah, and so I think if he would have gotten third, I don't even think we would have saw him up.
Because, we almost didn't.
Right. So we saw
even all. Yeah, he pulled in. Go ahead.
So Vettel pulled into the pit lane, stopped at like pit lane entry basically, and it was clear to me that he was beginning his protest. We went to go see, you know, and he walked straight to the Ferrari pit area, you know, like the hospitality tent, which. I really don't know who he was looking for there. I would have figured he would have walked up straight to the race direction, but
yeah, it's so. I mean, trying to put yourself in his shoes or in that cockpit, you get out of the car. I think it's just one of those literal like
I'm
like
so
a fresh air, a fresh air, walk it off type deal. You know, when you're like frustrated, we've all had this in life where you're like, I'm just gonna go take a walk around the block and like go outside and cool off. Like I think he just needed to go be somewhere else, away from the media, give himself a few minutes. As like that buffer time to try and collect his thoughts, not do anything stupid. Right. So I think it was just more of that. I don't know if he was going to go up and start banging on the glass at race control and see, because there's nothing that can be done. You know, that's
right.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
The old switcheroo though with the one and two.
Yeah, he did. I mean, hey, like you said, can't protest it. So can't fight it. So this is the protest.
Yeah. A little silent protest right there.
But it was super awkward. I mean, yeah. Just the whole thing. Obviously, as soon as he got out, I mean, honestly, when Hamilton pulled in to Parc Fermé, I could see on his face that he, you know, he was taking off his fire protection and everything like that. Mm-hmm. He just did not look happy or excited. He just, you know, he knew what was coming. Obviously, I'm sure once he saw the car, Vettel's car up there at the beginning of pit lane, he knew this was about to go down. And then he kind of had to collect himself and remind himself that, hey, like, there's all these people that are still happy for me. And so he kind of was like, turned it on for a second, went there and kind of jumped into the crowd and kind of whatever, gave them that. But yeah, it was obvious. He was just putting on a show. He wasn't that excited about it. Leclerc wasn't that excited about it. And so it just made the whole thing weird. And, you know, eventually Vettel came back and obviously got talked into it. I'm sure that there's some sort of rule that it's like, if you don't show up for it, then all your points are null and void.
The points or money or fines or grid penalties. I don't even want to know what those rules are. It's just, that would have been ridiculous too. It just would have been compounding, you know,
exactly,
like pissing into the wind. You don't want to just continue to hamper yourself for anything in the future. I mean, but yeah, two races this year that Ferrari, they put a great weekend together. And then in Baku, mechanical failure for Leclerc, Vettel spinning, Mercedes there to clean up the mess with a 1-2. And then this weekend, the incident at the 4-5 chicane on lap 48. And there's Lewis again right there to pick up a win from Ferrari. So that's two they should have had in the bag. Two weekends that were put together about, you know, 90% of the way, 95% of the way. And yeah, with less or 20-ish laps to go in each race, something happens and Ferrari gets, I guess, screwed, quote unquote, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Like I said, at the end of the day, we do have to hold Vettel a little bit responsible. I mean, again, he did make the mistake. I don't know. Do you think that he has kind of shown a habit of making mistakes in the lead?
Under pressure. Specifically this season, yeah. That's the second time that, because in Baku as well, when Hamilton was putting the pressure on him, he got in the throttle too early and lost the rear. So he lost the rear here in turn four, which sent him into the grass at turn five. So, yeah, same thing again with losing the rear end of the car. It's tough being in that position. So, and we reflect back to Monaco a little bit when Verstappen, probably the only guy on the grid you do not want behind you because you know that guy will throw it into the corner and do something crazy. Like, he will risk it. Hamilton had to fight him off for, you know, tens of laps at Monaco on the oldest tires the world has ever seen, but even still, right? So just understanding, like, I get it's impossible to pass at Monaco, but just, he didn't make a mistake on old tires, you know?
Right.
So it just kind of shows a level, not that Vettel is not as good, but he's not that good right now. He's just not.
Yeah. He's in a fast car.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of fallout, a lot of just commentary to come. I mean, we're recording this 5 minutes after it ended. So,
yeah,
it's all fresh. It's going to be interesting.
Next one's a French GP, Circuit Paul Ricard. So that'll be June 20th.
Right on. And next weekend we have MotoGP, and it is in Catalonia. So that's going to be exciting.
Spain again.
Yeah. Yep. It's we're getting to kind of the meat of the season here, and
yeah, you know, this is all Euro lands.
Yep.
Spain, France, Italy, Spain, Netherlands, Germany, Prague, or excuse me, Czech Republic.
Yep.
Austria. Yeah.
So we are excited for that, and we'll be giving some good commentary. Hopefully they it delivers again. I'm excited excited to see what how Petrucci follows up. I know we said last time it's like everybody who's a lot, most folks who win Mugello go on to win a consecutive race. So I'm sure he's coming in there feeling really good about himself.
Yeah, that's I think story of the year for me so far for 2019, as far as an individual effort by any athlete. I mean, obviously Tiger Woods came back and won, but they should make a little mini documentary about Petrucci's upcoming through GP, and then maybe cap it off with the Mugello win, because that'd be a great little 45-minute watch, you know. But yeah, for me, story of the year so far, Danilo Petrucci.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I'm just thinking back to the Parc Fermé difference between that race and what we just saw in Canada. Well,
yeah, what we just saw left me deflated. I think it left everybody deflated, because we all wanted a Ferrari victory and just something, you know, for that team, but it just nothing, just taken away, 5-second penalty. Like, and nobody was happy.
Nope.
Hamilton wasn't happy, like you said. Obviously, Vettel's not happy. Ferrari's not happy. Like, everyone was just flat at the end of the race. There was no excitement at the finish, and it was, yeah, sad. Sad end to that race.
Yeah, I think it's, I think there's a lot of people out there feeling pretty fed up with F1 in a lot of ways. And it's like, you know, that's the premier four-wheel sport. Like, it should be the best. You know, it should give that excitement level that I think we get from MotoGP fairly consistently. I mean, you can argue that the MotoGP is a little bit of the same.
Yeah, if Mark gets out front and doesn't make a mistake.
Right.
But at least you're fighting second, third, fourth, you know, not six, right. Seven, eight, you know.
Yeah, you're seeing guys get, I mean, they're still fast guys. I mean, you're seeing guys get qualifying, rookies getting qualifyings, which is just like, you know, that's awesome. It's great to see. So, yeah, I know, I'm sure anybody who matters doesn't listen to this yet, but I know they're going to hear it. You know, I know they're going to hear it from all around.
They're going to hear it from millions of people on Twitter and Reddit, and the internet will speak. They're not deaf up there. They got media relations, and they know what's going on.
Right.
But I mean, money probably wins over. But yeah, if the fan base legitimately started to drop off, and there was a, I mean, I know they have metrics for all that as far as a decline. But if it's like what happened in NASCAR, look at NASCAR 15 years ago compared to today, there's no one in the stands. Like, right. It's sad almost. Like, so the Indy 500 was huge. That's every year. It's one event, you know,
and sure.
The whole state goes to that race. So, but other than that, yeah, I mean, there can be a sharp fall off, and not that we want to see that at all, but I 2021 is the target, I think, for most people. That's on their eyes, it's on their calendar. And if they don't deliver, then we might see a sharp decline.
Right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this weekend. Again, thanks to everybody for tuning in. Really appreciate it. We're watching our, you know, it's cool to see even 100 folks download this podcast and give it a listen, which is pretty amazing to us. So keep it up. Let us know if you got any feedback. We'd be happy to hear it. So, Josh, anything else?
No, yeah, we'll talk to you next week, and hopefully we'll get our co-host Nash back on for some MotoGP action next week. So, we might get a triple threat next time around. As always, thanks for listening.
Later.